everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, I would not be surprised if the excessive heat warning is extended a day or so. 110, 112, it's like we're locked in.
Well, like we were discussing with Dr. Guido.
Yes.
That high-pressure dome is all the difference, and they are expecting it to move to the Four Corners area, and if it does that, we'll be in a more normal monsoon pattern, hopefully.
Boy, I hope so. What a week this has been. We just got hammered. People may have read about my quotes in the Arizona Daily Star about that storm that centered itself over our home and folks in the lower foothills. The roads are just unbelievably bad in the neighborhood. So if anybody's possibly listening from the Pima County Transportation Department, we need the grader to start doing some of these side streets, because some of these rocks are like razor sharp. Anyway, it's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zilkalo Village studio. Today is Friday, July 21st, 2023. Our radio station is 1030 KVOI, the voice for Tucson's trusted source for news and talk. We begin year 14 in January of our radio show and our 36th year on TV and radio in Tucson. We have our worldwide live listening podcasts and show archive at buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Folks are always invited to join us on the live line. The number 790-2040. Our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com, Dylan and the team, which now includes Jim Nintzel, who was with me in studio, have been great supporters of our work here. Jim, good to see you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be back.
As you transition now back into daily reporting, you're now the political, are you calling yourself political reporter specialist?
Oh, I think there's like a very
a
long
name.
Title associated with this.
But political
senior,
reporter.
I think it's government and political impact report.
Ooh, very nice.
And I should say it's and we're very fortunate to have received a grant from the National Organization Report for America that makes all this possible.
Well, that's good, and folks can always donate to keep Tucson Sentinel strong and healthy.
Please do.
Yes.
Please do.
Also, Dan Shear. Dan, thanks if you're listening. Green Valley News, Saharita Sun, great supporters. Tucson Local Media Group supports us. Their portfolio of publications include Tucson, Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview, Pima County Attorney Laura Conover. We try to bring Laura in once a quarter. This is her quarterly visit. She was elected as Pima County's chief legal officer in November of 2020, just as the pandemic was really starting to get going.
Right.
Hey, Laura, how are you?
Those were very exciting times.
Yeah.
I'm good, and I'm very happy to be back, and congratulations to Jim, and I sent that to the Sentinel as well. It's really nice to have you back.
Well, thank you very much.
Laura succeeded Barbara LaWall, and Barbara was at the helm of the Pima County Attorney's Office for about a quarter of a century. Overall, how are things doing at the office, Laura, personnel-wise? Are you up to speed, or are you getting there, or what?
We're really starting to feel like things are rolling in a good direction, both internally and externally. I think our hard work and our survival skills getting through COVID are paying off. Internally, we are steadfastly working with the county again on pay raises, encouraging the county to really focus on retention and being competitive. And so we're a huge player in that, of course, as being the law firm for the county. And ever present on our mind is making sure that these hardworking, dedicated civil servants are adequately compensated. And it's summertime, and so we have a whole new fresh batch of law clerks with us. That's always very exciting.
After their graduation?
Some while waiting for the bar, and then others are law students and preparing for their career.
So you've got some extra personnel.
Yes, it's a very happy time. You know, they bring a lot of positivity into the building.
Can an attorney make considerably more up at Maricopa County, your rival office up at the Maricopa County attorney's office? Or are we competitive?
When we came in and we made that big push for the first agency-wide salary raise since 1997, that was fantastic, and there was a wonderful honeymoon period there. And then, as you can suspect, of course, our neighbors, especially in Pinal, who have to work very hard to be competitive, Pinal, Maricopa, and even most recently the city of Tucson, have worked hard to follow in suit, creating, you know, another competitive problem all over again.
So if somebody wants to go to Florence, there's money for them up there in Pinal County.
The long, long history was a 30 grand raise and a shuttle. They have a shuttle, right?
Do they really?
They call it the Pima County Attorney's Office of the North, where we train them and then they take them. And we're doing everything we can to cut into that. You know, they have no choice. They work in Florence.
Yes.
It's not an easy environment. And so they have to do what they can for their system. And then in turn, I need to be as competitive as possible. And so that's what we're working on right now.
All right, let's bring in Jim Nintzel. Nintzel.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this restorative justice program that you guys are running over there. And I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about what, I think it's just getting off the ground. Can you talk a little bit about what it is and what you hope to do with it?
Absolutely. So what I always like to begin with is just a very simple explanation of what is restorative justice, since it is new in some respects to the state of Arizona in the criminal justice system. Restorative justice is taking a case and trying to make the victim as nearly whole as possible. And through restorative justice, by pulling it out of the normal court system, you can do that much more quickly for a victim. Our program is very victim-centered. Very victim-centric. They are empowered to choose whether their case goes into restorative justice at all, and then they choose whether and how they want to participate at all, personally or through an advocate or not at all. But it requires of the accused to enter into an agreement designed largely by the victim of how they are going to take actual steps to make the victim whole again. I always say that by building this, huge gratitude to our tribal brothers and sisters who've been using these practices since time immemorium, and local partners who do it for mediation purposes, right? Not when there's a crime going on. That, you know, that this concept exists for healthy therapeutic uses out in the community. But this is the first time in the state, as we understand, that we're building a program to offer it as yet another alternative to improve victim services. And we've just started piloting the very first few cases.
So talk about what this would look like in a case.
So if a victim so chooses in working with their victim advocate that they want their case to go into restorative justice, the accused is then offered it. They've got to go through kind of their own therapeutic process of agreeing to do whatever possible they can to make the victim whole again. And eventually, and again, it's a far more expeditious process, right, than the normal court system of a hearing every 30 days. You come into with trained facilitators, with the victim advocate, with the defendant, into a circle where the victim may choose to be present and to explain in person how they have been harmed and what it has meant to them, or the victim advocate can do it for them, or they can send a letter, or they can do nothing. But the defendant has to has to account personally in a therapeutic way for the harm they've caused, and to take responsibility for it, and then to work earnestly towards making the victim whole again to fulfill that agreement.
And how does that affect the prosecution of the accused?
Well, what's amazing is that victims are receiving faster, better services, and a defendant, and largely we're talking about low-level nonviolent, right? That's certainly where we're starting. We're talking, you know, property, these kinds of harms. The defendant, if earnest and if making good on their agreement, will not have a felony conviction, which is also, you know, the case is resolved without a felony conviction, which goes to the heart of both a better outcome and not felonizing this person for the rest of their life.
So the defendant in this case has the incentive to participate to avoid more serious charges.
Absolutely, or to avoid that felony conviction that lives on their record forever. You know, preventing them from housing, schooling, jobs. That's a huge incentive. Defendants make good all the time in the normal court system with restitution and perhaps incarceration and making good to the victim, but then they live the rest of their life with this mark on them, preventing them from employment. It hurts our own labor, and it hurts our own labor market.
How about the expungement of marijuana convictions while we're talking about things that can go on your record and be with you for 20, 30 years? How are we doing on that whole program, that effort, Laura Conover?
We just hit the 2-year anniversary of that possibility going live, of where you can bring forward your old simple possession of marijuana case and get it expunged off of your record. It's been a difficult and arduous path here in Pima County. Maricopa County allowed for kind of en masse mass expungement, and their numbers are a lot higher than ours. That's how the Maricopa County bench of judges handled it. Here, the Pima County bench was interested in litigating a number of the cases, and that slowed everything down remarkably. But now we have Court of Appeals case law, where the Court of Appeals on every single case affirmed our attempt to expunge the case. And so I'm hoping with that feedback, we can reset at the 2-year mark and start expunging at a higher volume.
So when you say they're litigate, the judges wish to litigate them, so you're the prosecutor,
right?
The attorney.
It's fascinating.
Assuming they... the person trying to expunge their record has an attorney, and I assume many of them can't afford an attorney to take care of this for them. Who is the prosecutor? Who's in the opposition? I guess the judges.
In some instances, the court itself was engaging in trying to look back at the original case and underlying facts, and if in disagreement, they were simply denying the expungement, and then we took that up to the Court of Appeals.
I see.
Mm.
Right.
All right. On that note, let's pause right here. Laura Conover, Jim Nintzel. We'll stick around. We'll have another segment coming up on the Buckmaster Show. It's our Friday Focus interview with Pima County Attorney Laura Conover and Jim Nintzel, who is a political reporter now at TucsonSentinel.com. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our Friday Focus interview today, Laura Conover is with us. Laura is the Pima County attorney. Jim Nensel is here. He works now at the TucsonSentinel.com. We're glad he does. He's back in the game, back out on the street, reporting on political activities in our community. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go to the live line right now. Caller Nancy would like to ask a question of Laura Conover. Go ahead, Nancy.
Yes, my question is, what about the death, the head-on collision that caused the death on Gates Pass about a month and a half ago by a drunk driver who had been let off over and over and over? This scares me about what's out there as I drive around with my grandchildren in the car. How did this come out with the family? He's dead now, a quality person, head-on collision by a drunk driver, let off by...
All right. Laura, any reaction to that?
To the extent that you are part of the family, Nancy, or connected to the family, I want to say I'm so sorry for your loss. I am briefed largely in real time on every homicide that occurs. With this being a month ago, I know the system is slow, but it means it's still in early days. What I hear you talking about are your concerns about the release process and after arrest, and I share those concerns. Our training for our initial appearance prosecutors, those prosecutors who handle that very first hearing after arrest, the training is all about articulating an ongoing threat of harm to the community. And repetitive DUI is a perfect example of that. And so our prosecutors argue earnestly when we feel like there's an ongoing threat of harm to the community. But the judges who run initial appearances, they make the final call. And that's been the subject of a lot of discussion. It's an issue that the sheriff and the chief of police and I care about deeply and are in steadfast agreement on that the process, that initial appearance process, needs to continue to improve.
Jim Nintzel.
Well, you know, I wanted to ask about, there was this incident with a former, now former, Tucson Police Department. He was an officer who was working off duty, fired shots into the back of a shoplifter, made, you know, national news. Originally indicted by a grand jury, the charges were tossed by the judge, and then the second grand jury did not indict back in January, I think. Is there anything new on that case that you can tell us about?
Was this the shoplifter who was in the wheelchair?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Right. At the Lowe's. You're talking about the Remington case.
Yes.
No doubt.
The Remington case. So
as I always make clear, and that's certainly true in this case, that it is an ongoing open file in our case, and so I can't discuss specific facts and circumstances. What I can say is that there has been a flurry of litigation that's gone up to the Court of Appeals, where we won in part, and then back down to the court, which just had a hearing last week. And so those records exist, and they demonstrate our earnest continuing to advocate for Victoria, who lost her brother in this incident, and to advocate for our case. And it's ongoing, but because it's ongoing, I can't get into to the facts and circumstances. And that's because Mr. Remington may face a jury in the future, and that needs to be a fair process.
The transition center, this is something new, looking to connect people that are leaving the Pima County Jail, hooking them up with community resources, so hopefully Laura Conover, they won't be back in the jail. How is that going?
That is always the ultimate goal, right? We mm-hmm. we want, as a system, to do everything possible to have people succeed coming back out of the system, because that is pro public safety. We want people to move on and then become participating members of the community. This effort, the transition center, trying to get people who are coming out of the jail, instead of just, you know, frankly releasing in the middle of the night onto Silver Lake there, having a warm handoff is what it's called. So that people get a plan in place to not come right back into the jail.
Mm-hmm.
There's that. We're in talks about possible expansion of the CRC, the Crisis Response Center. We're looking at a piece of property attached to the west side of the jail, I should say. I don't want to say attached. It's separate and apart, west of the jail. And all of these efforts are to try to get at the population that that is ill and in need of substance use disorder care, mental health care, that don't frankly belong in the jail, which is not a hospital and not mm-hmm. not the appropriate place. And what I want to encourage everyone to hear is that this is a metro collaboration. This is city and county working together at the highest levels and at the operating levels to really get at the righteous concerns about the conditions of our streets.
It's kind of a regional approach, isn't it? It's not just a city or county deal. Everybody's trying to get involved, which they should.
Absolutely. And to the extent that historically we haven't been able to do that, city and county collaboration,
yeah.
You know, we've all been here for decades now, and we know. But it's absolutely happening right now. And I think it also sets us apart from other cities that are really struggling, where leaders are siloed and have no relationship at all.
Matt has called us on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Matt, you're with Laura Conover. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, Laura, at the last Board of Supervisor meeting, an issue came up during call to audience by two commissioners on the merit system, Mike Helen, and it involves a sort of gobbledygook change to the Board of Supervisors' policies or rules on that. By chance, did the county attorney, have you been asked to review that at all for the Board of Supervisors, or are you aware of it and could comment on it? If not, I understand. Thank you. Bye.
Matt, I appreciate your graciousness there, because I think you've predicted my difficult answer. And this is a hard part of wanting to answer lots of questions and but having to honor the rules. And so as the county's attorney on the civil side, right, because I'm not a DA, I'm the county attorney, so I'm also the entire civil law firm. And we provide legal advice as needed and as appropriate to the Board of Supervisors, to the county administrator, Jan Lesher. And so then that legal advice is attorney-client privileged. And that's the best I can do. It's the best I can do.
Jim Nensel, what do you have, Jim?
I think this last weekend we actually had a group come through town, Change the Ref, battling gun violence. I believe you were there as well. What is the county doing at this point in an effort to reduce gun violence?
We're just talking about sort of life-changing events. And just to explain, Jim, to the listeners who these people were, this is an incredible group that got on a little, very hot yellow school bus led by the parents of Joaquin Oliver, who was murdered in his homeroom in Parkland, Florida, at Marjorie Stone Douglas High School in 2017, I believe. And his parents, Manuel and Patricia, launched this. There's another survivor on the bus. There's a cousin, the two co-founders of March for Our Lives. We were joined by a woman who survived the Las Vegas Harvest Music Festival mass shooting. And just to be in their presence and to think about the strength it must take your grief and to try to share it all the time to make change is incredible. And they're raising awareness, of course, on gun violence. It's an issue that the Tucson Police Department and the county at large is forefront on our mind. I can tell you that we're continuing to look at advocacy in the legislative arena. I don't want to give up on the possibility of a red flag law. In 2019, it did pass the state Senate and then stalled out in the House, and it had bipartisan support at the time. I think looking at it, changing it, continuing forward is something we should keep our eyes on. At the Pima County Attorney's Office, we are engaged in multi-agency intel and pattern sharing on the use of firearms to cause harm in our community. And last year, my office handed out 18,463 gun locks in our free time. So those are some of the things that we're allowed to do under a state legislature and under state laws, deeply restricting what we can do.
And talk a little bit about the red flag laws and what they would do if you could get one passed.
The reason why I like the red flag laws so much is because there's so much due process built into it. In other words, for owners of firearms who are lawfully in possession and lawfully exercising their Second Amendment right, if someone were to file a petition in court saying that they are a danger to self or others and should have their firearms removed, they automatically, you know, under my concept, they automatically get a court hearing. They get notice, they get opportunity to be heard. And so to the extent that it could be used somehow as harassment between neighbors or exes, you have all this due process and notice and fairness built in to make sure it's not. At the same time, those who are not mentally stable, those who are exhibiting extreme danger signs, of which we know how to recognize. We are all too educated now, you and me and everyone in between. We can file a petition where people should not be in possession of firearms. And if we save one life, it's worth trying.
How many states do you think have red flag laws? Do you have any idea?
I do. I have that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's half, but okay. It's near half. Many, mm-hmm. many states have what's called a red flag law or an emergency stop order. emergency protection order, and they are seeing good results of removing firearms from very dangerous situations and preventing harm.
All right, let's talk about a very hot button issue, the homeless, or as some are referring to them as the unsheltered population here in town. And when does it become a criminal offense if someone is out on the street and maybe panhandling? What's the law say about that?
So the law is very clear that it is not illegal to be homeless. And that's important to understand on so many levels. It's important to understand what the limitations are when you call for service. Now, what we train in our office and what we cross-train with law enforcement and collaborate on all the time is that it absolutely is unlawful to cause harm, to threaten harm to person and property. And so what we are looking for are those who are causing harm and making sure that they are held accountable, while at the same time also making sure that we are humanely addressing those who are living outside under dangerous, extreme heat. We can never, ever lose sight of humanity. No one... And I know people will, I know there are those who disagree with me and talk about a life choice and et cetera, but no one chooses to be outside without any opportunity for shelter at 113 degrees. That choice is born from mental illness. It's born from substance use disorder, a combination of both, a history of trauma, and being outside because being inside has caused trauma in other shelter situations or childhood situations. And so we can never lose sight of that humanity. But those who are out there causing harm, those who are out there pushing fentanyl, selling fentanyl, those who are destroying property, we are doing everything possible to divert resources into addressing that.
Jim, do you have a final question before we let Laura go?
I mean, you were elected on a reform ticket, the idea that you were hopefully changing up the way Pima County pursues justice. And I'm just wondering, 3 years into the job here, how's it going?
Well, 2.5 years, Jim. Don't rush me now.
two and a half years.
Close. You know, I'm in an interesting place right now. There's been a lot of introspection as I hit the halfway mark in January and going forward. And we have instituted a tremendous culture change, I think, internally. The diversity and representation in our agency is something we are extremely proud of. The number of Spanish speakers, the diversity, indigenous prosecutors for the first time, I could go on. The external policies that we've rolled out on the death penalty, on that we're rolling out on restorative justice, that we had the way we have handled juveniles and treating children as children and keeping them at a far higher rate in juvenile where we are allowed to by law. And what I am also optimistic about is that the data is starting to really affirm the basic promise of criminal justice reform is that we need to be data-driven and solution-oriented. And this is what I want to highlight right now, is that at the halfway mark right now in Pima County, we are down 30% on homicide. That is a lot of blood, sweat, and tears out of my office, out of TPD, out of the Sheriff's Department, collaborating, because when you treat substance use disorder and mental illness as you should, you then have high-level resources fully staffed in major crimes and violent crime where it should be. And we are 30% down from last year in homicide, bucking national and statewide trends.
All right. Have you decided about your own political future? Do you think you would like to go 4 more years with the job?
Well, you caught me on this last time, and so I should have a better answer. You know what I can tell you? I cannot go 44 years. That I know. I'm promising right now, 44 years is not something I'm looking to replicate. What I will say is that when I put
44, you're putting together the Steve Neely,
Barbara LaWall, right.
Yes,
the county will never
have
to deal with
their particular culture and their
that's right.
Okay.
But
right.
what I want to say critically is that when I put my political hat on, I'm very focused on the critical mayor and city council races going on right now. But at the same time, I'm aware that that time is ticking. And we're working very hard and steadfastly forward to make sure that we're fully prepared if the county wants another term from us.
But do you enjoy what you do?
I do now. The first 2 years were a labor of love. Between COVID and the homicide spike and the domestic violence spike.
It became hard to go to work some days, didn't it? During that period?
It not hard to go to work, hard to survive. I mean, I think it threatened to overwhelm us. It threatened, it tempted us to give up, all of us. And we didn't. We rolled up our sleeves and we went at it night and day. And I do mean night and day. And that hard work is paying off.
All right, Laura Conover, thanks. Great to see you. We'll see you next quarter, okay?
Bill, Jim, thank you both so much.
All right, Jim Nensel will be with me in our next segment. Can talk a little bit about the city election, which is coming up. Well, the early voting is underway.
It's well underway.
Yeah. All right. Back with Nensel right after this, Buckmaster on a Friday.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to our Friday Focus interview, Laura Conover, Pima County attorney, joining us. And we have said goodbye to Ms. Conover, and now we will devote our time with Jim Nintzel, Tucson Sentinel political reporter, as of July 1st. Jim, talk a little bit about the city election. What's at stake here?
Seats up for grabs.
Two seats
up for grabs. Realistically, we have
three
council seats up for grabs, but two primary races.
Okay,
and the mayor's race is up for grabs this year too, but she only has a write-in opponent. Mm-hmm. So the primaries that we were focusing on at this point would be the primaries on the west side, which is Ward 1,
mm-hmm.
where you have Lane Santa Cruz, who's wrapping up her first term in office, seeking re-election, going up against Miguel Ortega, who was one of three candidates who ran against her last time. He's back for a rematch and hoping, obviously, for a different outcome. He's hoping that he can get the support of the voters who supported other candidates in the last race and come out ahead on Election Day. And then we also have Ward 2, which is the east side ward, northeast side ward, where Paul Cunningham, who's been on the council since 2010 when he's appointed to the seat, is running for re-election against a political newcomer, a woman named Lisa Nutt, who's a local realtor and who's getting a lot of support from the Arizona Multi-Housing Association and the National Association of Realtors, who have spent a lot of money on her behalf. We've been looking at the campaign finance reports that came in this week. In Ward 1, Miguel Ortega actually hasn't turned in a report, or he hadn't as of this morning. But we did talk to him, and he told us how much he had raised and how much he had spent. He's being outspent about 10 to 1 by Lane Santa Cruz. So,
10 to 1?
Or 5 to 1, excuse me. I should say 5 to 1. She spent about $50,000, and he had spent about $10,000 as of June 30th. But there's also independent campaign operations in that ward, some who are supporting Santa Cruz and some who are supporting Ortega. Basically, she says she's ready for another term to continue doing the work that she has done. And he is saying that she hasn't done a very good job and it's time to give somebody else a chance, which I guess is the narrative of most campaigns.
I didn't realize he ran against her 4 years ago.
He did. That was a four-way race. That was when Regina Romero had given up the seat, so there was an open seat as pursued the mayor's office.
Yeah.
And so, four different candidates. About 8,000 people voted in that race. You're looking at the ballot returns now. I think there's been about 4,000 people who have already voted in the Democratic primary. So maybe half the people who are, I would say that 8,000 number is likely to be a ceiling, a lot closer to a ceiling than a floor, at least, in the number of people who turn out to vote. So probably about half the folks.
Still hard to beat an incumbent, isn't it?
You know, you mentioned that, and I go back, and I don't know of any Democrat who has been elected, who is running for re-election, who has lost a primary in the city of Tucson.
Wow.
There have been Democrats who are appointed to the office who have run for election to that seat, and they've lost. But I don't know of anyone who's lost a primary as far back as maybe the 1970s, which is as far as my memory goes. And it's very difficult to even dislodge an elected Democrat, period, in this town. I think the only person who has managed to do that was Steve Kosachik when he ran as a Republican against Nina Traceoff. And, of course, he's switched over to the Democratic Party since then.
How about Ms. Nutt, who is going against Cunningham? What's her beef with Cunningham?
Similar. She says that the city council has not taken care of there's too much crime. The streets are in disrepair. There's too many homeless folks. She's promising to fix the homeless problem. Councilman Cunningham will return the volley and say that he has, been working on persuading voters to support the sales tax to help fix the roads, and the money is coming and the work is being done. He points to the work that's already been done on a lot of surface streets, more arterials than the neighborhood streets, and promising that with this new sales tax money, all the residential streets are going to be fixed in the next 10 years, saying that there's been a lot of investment in the parks as a result of a parks bond, and et cetera.
The third council seat up for grabs, Councilwoman Nikki Lee, the incumbent.
Yeah, and she is not facing a primary challenger. She is facing a fellow named Ross Kapowicz in the general election. The Republicans actually have fielded somebody to run for all of these offices this year, which is not always the case, because they're at a terrible disadvantage in the city of Tucson. Democrats outnumber them 2-1, and under our election system, everybody runs citywide. So even if a ward is pretty evenly split between Republicans and Democrats, Republicans are going to have a pretty hard time winning that one because folks across the city can vote.
And summarize the mayor's race, please, in the final minute or so.
Yeah, so Regina Romero seeking her second term. I think I've been told that polling shows that she's a popular mayor. So the Republicans certainly have their work cut out for them. But we also have independent candidate Ed Ackerley, who mm-hmm. ran 4 years ago and mm-hmm. lost to Romero. So another rematch on the agenda this year, which makes, I think, even more difficult to unseat Romero.
In a three-way race.
There's even a Libertarian. So it's going to be a four-way race there. Which it's very challenging, again, to knock out a Democratic incumbent. And I think when your opposition is splitting the vote in different directions, it puts a pretty tall hill in front of the folks who want to knock her out of office.
All right, Jim Nentzel, we'll look for your work at TucsonSentinel.com. And this is your position as political reporter is being funded by a nonprofit group, right?
It is, yeah. A group called Report for America, mm-hmm. and also by local folks, because it's a matching grant. So we encourage folks to contribute to the Tucson Sentinel. You can find out by visiting TucsonSentinel.com how to make that happen. And we're having an unretirement party for me next week.
Yeah, I heard about that. You want to quickly mention where that is, the venue?
Yeah, it's going to be over at the Shanty downtown.
Oh, yes.
At 4th mm-hmm. Avenue and 9th Street.
Notorious journalist watering hole.
And politicians wander in
every now and then, too. Yeah.
Tell you, the place does not smell good. But come on by 6 to 9 p.m. Say hi to me and Dylan. And I'll tell you, Dylan has assembled just a really amazing team of folks. It's been a joy to get to know them over there at the Sentinel. We do a Zoom get-together every day. We have 9 folks on the call. It looks like the Brady Bunch as you look at your screen.
And a lot of fine young talent, too.
An amazing crew of folks and all working so incredibly hard to provide additional news in our community,
cover this town.
Yeah, I think it's just desperately needed, and I think this is really probably the future of journalism because of the way that the newspapers and the TV stations are going these days.
Glad to have you back in the saddle again, Jim. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Weekend Watch with Matt Russell coming up next Friday on Buckmaster.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
And away we go with Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We love to say this time of year, it's going to be cooler in Silver City, usually 10 degrees. I think this is going to be one of those days, Tom Fairbanks, that we're going to go up to 15 degrees cooler over in Silver City. 5,000 to 6,000 foot elevation, it really does make a difference. Start your planning for your three-hour drive over to Silver City by going to their fine website, southwestnewmexico.org. You will find there lots of things to do, lots of great places to stay, and great places to dine as well. All right, here he is, the longtime host of Weekend Watch. We're just so delighted to have him on our team, Mr. Matt Russell. Hey, Matt, trying to stay cool?
Yeah, as the Wicked Witch of the West would say, I'm melting.
That's a good time to go visit my friends over at Casa Video. I'm a huge fan. I'm there a lot.
So much fun. You know, they started out as a small video rental store decades ago, and now they're really a kind of a fun hangout place for so much more. Casa Video and Film Bar on Speedway near Country Club, celebrating their 40th anniversary today, Bill.
Oh, boy.
Now, this concept is built on their love of film, of craft beer, of community. Really one of the only places in town where you can catch a flick and sip some suds under the same roof. So they're going to be showing 1980s movies all day today with some great beer specials, food truck. I say swing by today to help them celebrate the big 4-0.
Hey, how's the Iron Chef competition going this year?
Yeah, it is one of Southern Arizona's biggest culinary competitions. And Bill, it's tomorrow at Casino del Sol. It's Iron Chef Tucson event. Reigning Iron Chef Ken Foy of Dante's Fire will take on a challenge from Chef Devin Sanner of Zio Pepe. And as you know, they'll have 60 minutes to prepare a four-course meal for the judges. Each course must contain the secret ingredient, which will be revealed just minutes before the clock starts to tick. All the info, ironcheftucson.com.
And when you're making that three-hour drive east of Tucson to Silver City, why not stop at Apple Annie's?
How convenient, right there in Wilcox. If you haven't been out there yet this season, this is the weekend to do it. Tomorrow and Sunday from 9 to 4, it's Taste of Summer at Apple Annie's. You're going to get chamoy, peach, and watermelon slushies, peach donut sundaes, summer milkshakes, fruit bowls, and then you can go out to the farm and pick your own fresh summer vegetables. Now, Bill, veggies sound good, but give me some of those peach donut sundaes. I'll see you at Apple Annie's this weekend.
Yeah, we love Apple Annie's. Now it is time for Matt Russell to close up shop at the award-winning Russell Communications and head home and look for that pool. And, hey, can you say, let's do a cannonball in the Russell pool?
I'll warn all my neighbors. All my neighbors have been been warned.
Yeah, anchors away. All right. Have a great weekend. Thanks, Matt.
You too, Bill. Thanks.
All right. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, wholly responsible for the content of the program. My thanks, as always, to Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing on the other side of the glass, and everybody here at Bustos Media Tucson, the entire team, everybody wishing our listeners well. Stay safe. Try to stay cool. Have a lovely weekend.